Rod's Pulse Podcast Number 38, Interview, Dr. Michael Barrett on Heart Sound Podcast and Black Lab.
This is Rod's Pulse Podcast, the podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts and other e-learning technologies. Welcome back. Hi, this is Rod, and that's a song you may have actually heard on the radio. It's called See the Sun, and it's by an up-and-coming rock group from California called Black Lab. Very interesting group. They apparently almost had a record deal, which fell through, but they've had songs appearing in the movie Spider-Man and Blade Trinity, and they've become quite a phenomenon in the podcasting world. So I think you'll enjoy the song. I'll play the full song at the end of my podcast. Now for my main topic today, I'm interviewing Dr. Michael Barrett. He's a cardiologist at Temple University here in Philadelphia. I mentioned his work on my last podcast, and he graciously agreed to be interviewed. He takes heart sounds, some simulate it, and presents them to students. And his contention is, and he's published on this, is that it can take 500 repetitions of a particular heart murmur before it's really embedded in one's brain and one can reliably detect heart murmurs. So without further ado, here's my interview with Dr. Barrett. I will say that this was done over the phone, so I apologize for the quality of the sound, but that's as best as we can do right now over the telephone. So here we go.
Okay, I'm here with Dr. Michael Barrett. He's a cardiologist at Temple University Medical Center. Welcome, Dr. Barrett. Thanks for agreeing to be interviewed.
Thanks for having me.
I noticed on the Podosphere an article that pointed towards your use of audio from heart sounds to help teach your students. What made you decide to go that route and produce these audio MP3 files for your students?
Well, as a cardiologist, I've been bothered by a long time by the fact that medical students don't do a very good job of teaching them to recognize heart sounds. A lot of the work over the years has shown that medical students only recognize 30 to 40% of abnormal heart murmurs. And in fact, this doesn't improve for their entire medical training right through residency. So a few years ago, I began to look into this problem. And what I discovered was learning to recognize heart sounds was not a cognitive skill. It wasn't something you had to study from a book and learn. Mm-hmm. It was a technical skill. You had to hear that sound about 500 times. Mm-hmm. So the best way to achieve that kind of repetition, I thought, was to create some audio files, which we then would distribute to the students actually over the web.
I see. In the past, I know there were devices where, you know, you can have more than one student listening to somebody's heart sound, or I think at Jefferson they used a device where it would actually, in a lecture hall, would broadcast a sound to remote stethoscopes. Is that something that you had also used? Or?
Yeah, that's actually, most of those devices use a simulator, like a Harvey,
right,
a human simulator, and then they use infrared headphones to broadcast mm-hmm. it to an entire class. And I've used Harvey. The problem with that is each murmur needs to be heard about 500 times.
Mm-hmm.
So if you work that through, that's about 10 minutes.
Right.
And that's a little bit long to lock kids in a classroom. And, you know, you're trying to teach a base of five murmurs.
Uh-huh.
So that's just a little bit too much time for that kind of direct contact. So what we did was we actually put these audio files together with the 500 repetitions in each file. And then we put them on the web, and the students would download it to their iPod. And now they're free to wander around, listen while they commute, listen while they work out. It's a much more, acceptable. possible way to get that kind of repetition in.
Sure. That's interesting. Some of my audience likes to know some of the technology behind this. How do you actually record the? And I guess you simulate it and real heart sounds.
Yes,
and
we
if
do.
So, how do you record the sounds?
Well, we use real human heart sound recordings taken from patients over the years for testing.
Mm-hmm.
When we like to do pre-testing and post-testing to really prove we're making a difference. But we found for the teaching part, those human heart sounds invariably contain extra non-cardiac noises, breathing sounds, skin sounds, and so forth. And we found it was more efficient to use simulated heart sounds, which are very clean, very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you created the ultimate perfect mitral regurgitation murmur.
I see.
And it turns out that it's more efficient. Your brain will lock onto that clean sound quicker and learn the sound more easily if you use the simulated ones for the repetition part.
Mm-hmm. And when you make these recordings available, do you also include your own a lesson in there? Do you talk, or is it just the plain heart sound?
Well, 500 beats of just plain heart sounds would put you to sleep. So what I did was I break it up by putting about anywhere from 30 to 90 seconds of commentary, usually to provide a clinical context for the student, like where you put the stethoscope to hear this sound, how you turn the patient, how you can bring this sound out. And then I give them about 20 beats at a time. Then I break back in and give a little more context, then another 20 beats, and so forth. So it really tries to reinforce what they've learned in class, while supplying that auditory repetition that's, in fact, crucial to the skill.
Uh-huh. Now, you make the MP3 files available on a website for your students. How do you know, do you just look at logs to see how many times they've been downloaded, or do you have students give you feedback? Do they have to report that they've listened to these, or?
Well, when we started out, we would just hand out CDs, actually.
Okay.
And at that time, this was about 4 years ago, at that time I thought that the students were so motivated to learn it that no monitoring was necessary.
Uh-huh.
And that didn't quite turn out to be the truth. First of all, the students came back and said, gee, nobody listens to CDs anymore. We put them on our iPod. So at that time, we changed over, because editing for a CD is a little bit different than editing for an iPod.
Mm-hmm.
We created the MP3 files and made them iPod friendly, with titles and the name of the murmur and how long
right.
it will last. But then it turns out when you put this in the curriculum, the students will only take it seriously if you act as if it's serious. So what we did was we used Blackboard at Temple, where
mm-hmm.
I am, and the students, each student is logged in under their email address.
Right.
They take a pretest before I release the MP3 files, and we score that automatically. We then post those files, and they're free to download them and listen as much as they need to. It turns out that there's a fourfold range over the amount of repetition that normal adults have to learn a sound. So some students will get this after listening to only 200 repetitions of each murmur. Some will require as much as 800 repetitions. And we leave them free to do that on their own.
I see.
They then come back and take a post-test. Again, log in on their email. And if we capture that score, there's a minimum passing score of 80%. They're free to come back and take that post-test as many times as they need to till they achieve that score.
I see.
So that's pretty much how we set it up.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Have you had any pushback? I guess most students these days have an iPod or some kind of MP3 player. Have there been any complaints about the students don't have the equipment these days?
Or? Not been a problem. Well, it's an MP3. If you mm-hmm. don't have an iPod, you simply download it to your computer. Listen at your computer if you want, or burn a mm-hmm. CD if that's what you have, or use your iPod. But no, we've had no negative feedback at all. In fact, just the reverse.
Uh-huh.
90% of students like this way of learning, and to me it was even more rewarding. It's 95% say they heard these sounds in their patients after the course.
Wow.
And I found that to be one of the most rewarding aspects of this work.
That's really something. That must be heartening.
It is. I mean, for years I was the guy who gave that lecture on heart sounds. And in an hour, you simply cannot achieve these repetitions. And I knew at the time we weren't achieving our goal as
mm-hmm.
teachers, and now I think we are.
Uh-huh. It's funny, I guess from a layman's point of view, these days you think with all the diagnostic tests and fancy instrumentation that folks may not think that just listening to your heart is as important as it used to be, but I take it as it's as important as ever.
I think it is. Patients certainly think it is. If you fail to put a stethoscope on a patient's chest during an exam, you will get pushback. They will feel you have not done a complete exam, and in fact, they're right. I still think on a cost-effective basis, a stethoscope will stack up very, very well against the newer technologies because it is so cheap.
That's right.
And in 3 or 4 hours, you can become competent. I mean, whether you're a cardiologist or a family practitioner or a nurse practitioner, anybody's got 3 to 4 hours to learn this basic skill, which really acts as a screening test to determine who needs a sophisticated echo, you know.
Uh-huh.
I think it does make sense to this day.
While we're talking about this, I thought I'd just pause briefly and play one of your samples so our audience can hear what it would actually be like. So let me play that now, and then we'll come back.
Okay.
Mitral regurgitation. The characteristic auscultatory finding of mitral regurgitation is a holosystolic murmur of constant intensity, which is heard best at the cardiac apex. This murmur is high-pitched and blowing in character. Listen to a patient with mitral regurgitation. I will start with 3 normal beats and then add the murmur.
Okay, so it's very interesting. Obviously, I could tell, especially when you give a normal sound and then a murmur, you can pick up that difference right away.
Well, we use those. We put 3 normal beats at the start of each murmur. Mm-hmm. That's to clue the brain into the fact that here is systole in between the short period in between those 2 beats, and then here's diastole, the longer period between each set. So it gets your brain ready to hear a systolic murmur or a diastolic murmur.
Now that you've had some obvious success and in presenting this content this way, and you've published on it, I'll have a link to the abstract of the article that you've published for our listeners. Have you considered doing other podcasts for other topics, or any of your colleagues that you know of at Temple using podcasting for education?
There are some because I've talked to them. And cardiology is the area I know mostly. There is an extensive group of podcasts on the American College of Cardiology website, which is cardiosource.com. I don't know if we gave you that website earlier.
No, I'll definitely make a note of that in my show notes.
The American College of Cardiology has interviewed cardiologists and researchers going back 20 years, and they used to send out CDs of these, you know, conversations every month. And now you can actually look up and download and listen to any number of those podcasts on that website. I think in cardiology they probably have done the most in advancing podcasting for cardiology.
I guess my question is, for continuing education, is this something that's used to, do cardiologists have to be recertified in their ability to detect actual murmurs, or is this something that's assumed?
That's a very good question. It's interesting. Cardiologists are boarded by the American Board of Internal Medicine, and since 2000, this board has been testing cardiologists, and in fact all internists, on their ability to recognize these basic murmurs at their board recertification examination. So every 10 years, cardiologists as well as internists have to recognize these murmurs on a certifying examination.
Very interesting. So there's, I've mentioned in previous podcasts that this, you know, educational mode is really ideal for continuing education. And I wasn't even thinking at the time of an audio, you know, content like heart murmurs, but this seems like an ideal platform for brushing up and even doing CME.
Exactly. I don't think there's another way to teach heart sounds other than audio. There are people who say, I'm a visual learner. And the fact is you can't learn this if you don't listen. No amount of visuals is going to allow your brain the ability to make an auditory template of this sound and then recognize that template in patients. So, yeah, I think audio is ideal for this.
Very interesting. Is there anything else you think our audience would like to know about your experience with doing this for your students?
Well, not just for the students, but actually the paper I'll be presenting later this month at the American College of Cardiology is in practitioners already in practice. And what I think we're going for there is they also have these needs. And for a practitioner, when I was in private practice for 10 years, I found the time I had available for audio learning was in my car, commuting back and forth from the hospital. So I think podcasts, once they're downloaded to an appropriate platform, can be very useful for practitioners as well.
That's right. It sounds like a good approach. Out of curiosity, do you listen to any podcasts?
Occasionally. I'll be honest, I'm not that much of a regular listener right now.
I understand what you're saying about commuting, because that's how I got started. I'd like to listen to NPR, for example, but part of my commute's in the subway, so I would lose the signal.
Yeah.
And I went to do a search on Google about, you know, free audio programs. I didn't necessarily want to pay for an audio book, and that's how I discovered podcasting.
So. I know. I knew a long time ago when I was in practice that that was the only free time I had to learn. You know, it didn't involve my stopping what I was doing to learn. So I always took advantage of that, usually with CDs in those days. But I think podcasts are now the way to go.
That's right. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us. And I'll be posting this shortly, maybe as early as tomorrow. I try to get one of these out every 2 weeks. I will have in my show notes links to the Temple Times article and your other article you published.
Very good. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much.
Right.
Okay, that's my podcast for today. I just like to remind you to stay tuned for the full song called See the Sun by the group Black Lab. Have a great week.
Please leave odd feedback at 610-616-2199.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to leave Rod feedback. You can go to www.rodspulsepodcast.com and leave comments on his blog. You can send feedback to his email address, rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. You can also send audio feedback by calling into his comment line at 610-616-2199. Till next time, have a great week.
The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Merry, and does not represent the official viewpoint of Thomas Jefferson University, or any other institution or company.